right here. See my old friend Martin. Can you tell me where he's gone? He freed a lot of people, but it seemed good they die young. I just look around and he's gone. Didn't you love the things that they stood for? Didn't they try to find some good for you and me? Then we'll be free someday. He's gonna be one day anybody here. See my old friend Bobby.
Ladies and gentlemen,
can you tell me where he's gone?
I'm only going to talk to you just for a minute or so this evening, because I have some very sad news for all of you.
Abraham, Martin, and John.
And I think sad news for all of our fellow citizens and people who love peace all over the world. And that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis, Tennessee.
This is KPFT, Houston.
One man come in the name of love. One man come and go. One man come here to justify.
Martin Luther King dedicated his life to love and to justice between fellow human beings. He died in the cause of that effort. In this difficult time for the United States, perhaps well to ask what kind of a nation we are and what direction we want to move in. For those of you who are black, considering the evidence evidently is that there were white people who were responsible, you can be filled with bitterness and with hatred.
Then I got into Memphis.
And a desire for revenge.
And some began to talk about the threats that were out.
We can move in that direction as a country.
What would happen to me from some of our sick white brothers?
Black people amongst blacks, or white amongst whites.
Well, I don't know what will happen now.
Filled with hatred. Forward one another.
We've got some difficult days ahead.
We've had difficult times in the past, and we will have difficult times in the future.
But it really doesn't matter with me now.
We can make an effort, as Martin Luther King did.
Because I've been to the mountaintop.
To understand.
Like anybody, I would like to live.
And to comprehend.
A long life, longevity has its place.
And replace that violence.
But I'm not concerned about that now.
With an effort to understand.
I just want to do God's will.
Compassion.
And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain.
And love.
And I've looked over. I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
Early morning, April 4, shut rings out in
Hello and welcome to Access Sacramento and the Voice. You're listening to great speeches and interviews, and I'm Steve Lerman. Today's program includes Scott Horton interviews Thomas Woods. Thomas E. Woods is co-author of Who Killed the Constitution and We Who Dare Say No to War. He discusses America's turn from a republic to an empire.
And so one of the arguments that so-called Federalists who supported the Constitution made to reassure these skeptics was specifically to point out that the president under the Constitution lacks the power to declare war. Now, one way that the neocons have tried to wiggle out of this thing, where, you know, we can clearly see in the text of the Constitution, as you point out, Scott, that it, you know, it says that, you know, Congress declares war. One way they've tried to weasel out of this is through this argument by John Yoo, who was the Deputy Assistant Attorney General for a couple of years in the Bush administration. Now he's a law professor, and he clerked for Clarence Thomas. John Yoo tried to argue that really, declarations of war in the 18th century were just understood as declaratory. They were just statements to the world to let everybody know, let the enemy know, let your own country know, let other countries know that a state of war exists. But he argued that a declaration of war didn't actually amount to the initiation of hostilities. It was just a notification. Well, in fact, it turns out that it could mean that, but in the 18th century, it also could mean the initiation of hostilities. And when we remember that Federalists used this argument to reassure anti-Federalists, don't worry about this president under the Constitution, he won't have the power to declare war. If John Yoo's interpretation is correct, then we're supposed to believe that supporters of the Constitution were reassuring skeptics by saying to them, oh, don't worry, the president doesn't have the authority to issue declaratory statements. The Congress can issue declaratory statements. All the power the president has is to actually send the country into war.
Yeah,
oh, that
exactly.
Would reassure people, right? I mean, it doesn't make sense. The argument they're making does not make sense, but they're counting on people not really, you know, not really paying attention, I think.
Well, and, you know, here's the thing, too. In the larger sense, we have this theory here. You know, and I don't mean to sound too patronizing or whatever, but it does sort of cut to the core of the idea, like it says in the Declaration of Independence, that people are born free. We allow these governments to exist for the purpose of protecting our rights, and they're bound by this social contract, this Constitution, which is the supreme law of the land. No laws that contradict it may stand unless you amend the Constitution and change it. The law is the law. The English language means what it says, etc., etc. If that's not true, then I guess we know we're so far already off of even the idea of the Constitution really limiting the power of the government. I mean, we just look at the size of our government and its activities compared to what it was when they created this thing. If you took one of the founders out of their grave and brought them here and said, check out all this, and by the way, great Constitution, we still have it, they would laugh in our face and say, no, you don't. What are you talking about? So I guess the question is, you know, what are we supposed to do? Just a new Constitution that gives them all this unlimited authority so it's legal, or figure out some way to make them pretend at least to obey the law? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a difficult question, Scott. I mean, I only wish I knew the answer. I mean, in my opinion, look, there's no way to get them to follow the Constitution. I mean, apparently a majority of Americans are either not interested or feel paralyzed or frankly like the system we have now. So, you know, there's not much you and I can do, Scott, other than tell the truth, you know, as we see it. But for me, I still think the Constitution is useful because, you know, for people who may not quite realize exactly how badly we've gone wrong, but have some kind of inchoate sense that something just isn't quite right, pointing to the Constitution can be a real wake-up call for a lot of people to say, look at how absurdly remote we are from this obvious model. I mean, just today, the past few days and week, you know, this doesn't pertain to a war per se, but, you know, we've had the president deciding that he's going to bail out this and that company and this and that mortgage outfit and whatever. And it doesn't even occur to anybody. Well, wait a minute. Does he actually have the authority to do that? No one even cares. Like,
well,
the subject doesn't come up, right?
Well, I think that's why they don't, because they say, listen, this Constitution is from 1789, and it couldn't possibly provide for all the wonderful things that we need our government to do for us. We don't want to really throw the whole thing out because we kind of like the Bill of Rights and we're kind of worried about what might replace it, but come on, it's 2008. We need an all-powerful president who can bail out insurance companies and mortgage firms or else the whole society will collapse.
Right. So we need an all-powerful president who can bail out his friends, you know, on Wall Street or something, but then let's pretend to be shocked and surprised when he also wants to listen to your phone calls and, you know, look in your window or something.
And torture people.
So, I mean, you know, it seems to me that people who for years have been arguing that, you know, the Constitution is this supposed to be this flexible document that changes with the times, well, you know, now they see George W. Bush and they're upset the Constitution isn't being obeyed. Well, you know, look, you haven't got a leg to stand on, as far as I can see. I mean, the whole point of the Constitution, if we're going to have one, is that it would have to be read according to the, you know, original meaning of the text, or otherwise, what is the point? As Jefferson said, you may as well have a blank piece of paper for a Constitution. Yes, it means that the federal government won't be able to give you free money and do all these other things, but it also won't be able to do a lot of the really nasty, rotten, immoral thievery and killing that it's responsible for. But again, this idea that we're supposed to have a flexible Constitution, what that really means, I mean, of course, in a sense, we do have a flexible Constitution. You can amend it if you want to change it. But what that really means, when people say we need a flexible Constitution, they're really saying we need a dead Constitution that can't restrain the government. We need a Constitution that the government can decide and will tell us what its meaning is according to what it needs to do. Well, all right, but if you expect to live in a free society under that arrangement, you're sadly mistaken, and it's exactly this type of system the American revolutionaries fought against. The British had a living, breathing constitution. It was an unwritten document that, you know, the British government would have to tell you from day to day what it meant, and it might be the opposite of what they told you the previous day, and Americans decided we're not going to live under something like this. We want a fixed rule that we can change from time to time if absolutely necessary, but that otherwise we're going to follow to the letter so we don't wind up under this type of tyranny. And well, look where we are.
Yeah, and you know, that's such a good point that, hey, it says right there in Article 6 or 7 or whatever, here's how you amend it. You can amend it. People act like you couldn't or something. They, you know, they pretend that even the amendment process itself is too complicated and archaic and difficult. And so why not just let Congress pass a law? And you know, it's funny because, well, like you're saying, you're picking on the conservatives basically for being at least as bad as the liberals with, you know, you have the liberals have their whole living constitution doctrine, which, as you say, means simply that it's dead and they can do whatever they want. And it's the Federalist Society, Samuel Alito and John Roberts, who are now on our Supreme Court, the strict constructionists opposed to all this judicial activism. They are the greatest champions of the president's war powers. And in fact, I'll tell you a funny story. This guy, John Roberts, the day before he was interviewed by George W. Bush in the White House for his nomination for his job to be Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States of America, the day before that job interview, he, as part of a federal three-judge panel, issued a ruling saying that, yes, George Bush can abduct and torture and kidnap and completely make up out of whole cloth military tribunals for whoever he wants.
See, that doesn't surprise me at all. You're right it's these so-called conservative Supreme Court justices who also happen to be presidential and executive supremacists, you know, and they've got their own version of the living Constitution. They're going to read into it what they want to read into it. You know, I mentioned And by the way, on the Federalist Society, they have, you know, all independent chapters at various law schools. And I've spoken at some Federalist Society chapters where there's a preponderance of libertarians who are good guys. So there are some good guys in that Federalist Society. But I understand exactly the type that you have in mind. On this subject, this John Yoo fellow that I mentioned who has been involved in the Federalist Society, he's kind of spun out some kind of novel theories about presidential power, and my co-author of Who Killed the Constitution, Kevin Gutzman, met him years ago back in the 1990s, and they got to talking, and my friend found out that Yoo was working on a major article on presidential war powers and looking at the framing of the Constitution and the state ratifying conventions and what light this can shed on that subject. Well, Kevin Gutzman happens to be an expert on the Virginia ratification process, so he said to Yoo, listen, I'll send you my work and that can be a help. And you say, oh, that'd be wonderful. I'd love to see what they have to say. Well, He never wrote to Kevin again, never corresponded with him again, never talked to him again, because of course Kevin's research finds exactly the opposite of what Yoo wants to find. He wants to find an American history in which it's normal for presidents to behave unilaterally. So it's not even just that, well, maybe Yoo's just ignorant or he hasn't read the right books. I mean, somebody sent him the truth with citations to all the relevant primary literature. And he completely disregarded it in his scholarly work. So, I hate, Scott, to be the bearer of cynicism here, but I'm afraid some of these people are not purely motivated by truth alone.
I wonder about that. Ambition and avarice and things like that may be coming into play because, of course, this guy, John Yoo, he helped Jay Bybee and William Haynes and David Addington. These are the men who conspired to break American law. And American law enforcing, separate American laws have nothing to do with treaties, plus American laws enforcing the Geneva Conventions in this country, which forbid kidnapping and torture.
And in fact, there's a famous debate that you had with a guy from the Notre Dame Law School Center for Civil and Human Rights, and you was asked, this was in about 3 years ago, you was asked, if the president deems that he's got to torture somebody, including by crushing the testicles of the person's child, there's no law that can stop him? And you responded, no treaty. And then his interlocutor said, also no law by Congress. That's what you wrote in the August 2002 memo. And Yu's reply was, I think it depends on why the president thinks he needs to do that. So if there isn't an adequate reason for the testicle crushing, then, maybe we might say something. But, this, and what really, ticks me off, by the way, that was the sound of me slamming the book down on my desk, but what really ticks me off about this is how many, frankly, supposedly religious people have latched on to this Bush administration and been such big supporters of it, want to have a repeat of it on steroids with John McCain. I'm sorry, but, I'm on record, and I've written a lot of books about Catholicism. I'm involved in the church a lot, and I'm sorry, but you don't qualify for membership if you think this is morally acceptable. I mean, you just don't. There have to be some criteria, and it's not just abortion. There has to be some criteria to make you a member of the church. It seems to me, and this ought to be one of them. No crushing of testicles of children. This kind of thing, and that people have been able to get away with portraying themselves as great, as religious people, whatever, is such a moral atrocity, in my opinion, which is why yesterday on LouRockwell.com I wrote that article called Pro-Lifers for Murder.
Mm-hmm.
Got a little hate mail for that one, but that was the point. I wanted to provoke these people who deserve provocation. So
yeah, well,
richly.
And the ones who write to denounce you should ask them, does it count as an abortion if a Republican drops a bomb on a pregnant woman from the sky?
Yeah, I know it. It's just it is just unbelievable, and I'm particularly sensitive to this because, back when I was, an early college student, I've confessed this a few times before, so this is not a complete Scott Horton scoop here, but, I was basically a neocon without knowing it. I just sort of figured, well, I know I don't like the Democrats. I know I basically believe in a free market economy, so I guess that means I'm a Republican. I mean, I was not intellectually creative enough to think of any other alternative. So I guess I'm a Republican. I guess I like Rush Limbaugh. I guess I support the Persian Gulf War. I mean, I just sort of took all these things as my, my natural issues. And for me, war was like a great video game beamed into my home that I could enjoy, you know, while having a snack. I mean, and anybody who would try to point out to me the unthinkable and unspeakable human suffering that was being brought about by these things was, in my view, just missing the point. I mean, the righteous American government is raining down justice on the bad guys. You know, what are you, some kind of a liberal? And so I see shades of my former self in so many of these Bush administration addicts that it particularly sets me off, you know, when I encounter it. No, look, I was there, people, and, you know, I have to believe that, you know, like me, you can be reached. I was reached. Somebody persuaded me I was wrong. And so that's why a lot of my articles and my stuff, I pitch to that segment of the population, hoping that maybe some of them still have an independent enough mind that they might listen.
Geez, I was going to say, just wait till, you know, Democrats are in charge next year, and then all these people will be clamoring to become our friends as enemies of the state. But, boy, I guess I'm not so confident that's going to happen now. They may be, you know, all the amen corner for the McCain years coming up.
Yeah, no, I know. And, you know, I just had Anthony Gregory on my own program the other day, and he said, he put it so well. He said, you know, because, of course, the Democrats are such a pathetic excuse for an opposition party. And he said, look, the Democrats are not going to succeed if they come off as the somewhat elitist, somewhat anti-bourgeois sellout party, which is exactly what they do. I mean, they go out of their way to try to offend the sensibilities of the vast majority of Americans, you know, with their stupid attacks on Sarah Palin, who is not beyond attack, by the way. She should be attacked, but not for the stupid bozo reasons. Oh, she lives a bourgeois lifestyle or something. I mean, this is just absolutely idiotic. And then, you know, again, what was it that made Barack so popular? You know, his anti-war view, which now he wants to repudiate. It's like, I mean, seriously, it's like there's some demon somehow running these campaigns. So whoever's running the Bob Barr campaign, for example, you know, who wants to lose votes, apparently, seem to be running Obama's campaign. Why can't they run a simple, crummy 30-second ad showing just clips of McCain as an insane lunatic? Why should McCain be ahead among independents, for heaven's sake? Independents are supposed to be, you know, the sober, clear-thinking, normal Americans. They're way, like, by 15 percentage points there for McCain. Why don't you run that clip about, let's stay in Iraq for 100, 1,000, or 10,000 years? Why don't you run that over and over and over again? Why don't you run McCain claiming that he can walk through Baghdad neighborhoods completely unarmed, when that was a complete lie? And he's just living in a dream world. Why don't you compile that into an ad? No. We just have to run sloganeering ads. I mean, amazing. I mean, you and me could run a far better campaign than any of these hacks, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the Democrats, the thing is about them is they're pathetic, and there's not really much to sell there.
Yeah. I mean, why can't, you know, an anti-war position does not have to be a turnoff to the electorate if it's explained correctly. Look, you know, it's an embarrassment. We are totally isolated in the world. We've expended, we're going to be expending in the long run, trillions of dollars on the basis of a war that we all know, every general knows, we shouldn't have fought in the first place. I mean, there's no way that it's quote, liberal to point out what is obvious to the whole world. Now, let's return to the America that we know, that, you know, our founding fathers would be proud of. I mean, just that. What is so hard about that?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, Ron tried it and it didn't sell. But then again, if it was Barack selling it, Barack's a hell of a salesman, you know. Ron stumbles when he talks sometimes.
Yeah, I know. It's got, well, these are a whole lot of what ifs, but yeah. You know, we'll see what happens in 2012. I mean, it depends on whether the Democrat or the Republican wins. But in 2012, maybe we'd get an interesting. I can't believe I'm still interested in politics now. You know, I was never interested in, you know, 1990s, you know, Dole versus Clinton, who cares? But because of Ron Paul, you know, now I've got kind of like that glimmer of hope that
well,
maybe.
Well, and because John McCain's pure malevolence and ignorance, and he's making this interesting. Usually there's not a dime worth of difference, and I don't think there really is in policy, but just in terms of, like, who might wake up in the morning angry and start a war, there's a difference in who's running for office this time, I think.
Well, I think former New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson is going to run, if Obama wins, he's going to run in 2012. Hmm. And he's not perfect, but on this stuff, he's very, I mean, he'd probably be the only non-interventionist on the stage, so he'd be somebody to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, he was definitely an anti-drug war guy, I remember that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, I really thank you for your time. I guess the answer to the question, who killed the Constitution, is the politicians and the American people who let it happen right in front of their eyes. I'm sorry we're all out of time, but there's a whole bunch more stuff I wanted to ask you about. But anyway, it's always good to talk to you, Tom.
Thanks a lot, Scott.
All right, folks, that's Tom Woods from the Ludwig von Mises Institute, author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to American History and Who Killed the Constitution. And the brand new one is We Who Dared Say No to War, which is a history of American anti-war writing going back to the very beginning there. And as soon as I actually read that book, I'm going to interview Tom and Murray Polner, his co-author, all about it on this show.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio. I pull you a little closer. You say no. You say you don't like it. I say you're a liar. But when we get, it's like fire.